Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Good Medicine is Cheaper Medicine. I'm Shelley Wrench, along with Dr. Nash Gabriel from the Gabriel Cancer Center. And today we have a very great episode, jam-packed with...
All our episodes are great,
Shelley. Yeah, they are all great. Today is kind of mind-blowing, and I think I need to preface...
Aren't all our episodes mind-blowing?
I think so.
By the way, we don't talk about anything that everybody else talks about.
No.
We talk about stuff that people don't want to talk about, like outside the box.
And this one is definitely...
Disruptive talks.
Definitely outside the box.
Today. Yes.
I think it's important that I preface this episode, though, with some other hats that we wear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that everybody who listens to us understands that we actually help employers in the area to save money on their healthcare expenses. And so today I want to tap into some of the things that we're actually doing to help save money for our employers, not even just local. We have employers who are outside the area as well. How can we help employers dig through all the conundrum of those high-cost medical expenses and keep them lower costs to not only get employees and retain employees, and everybody wins because the cost of healthcare is lower?
Right. And Shelley, just to that effect, since I graduated medical school in Iraq, I always was conscious of one fact, that physicians generally are, when they treat patients and when they admit patients, whatever they do, they really don't ever think about the cost. Health is very important. I think we should spend as much money as it takes to provide excellent health service to patients.
So they don't have a medical school. They don't have cost of healthcare 101.
No.
Do they have 102, 103? Do they have anything?
And they shouldn't.
No.
I know there are some medical schools these days that they want to teach economics. You know what? Medicine is a very complex thing, and we have only 4 years to learn just to scratch the surface of it. I am not for the idea of wasting time learning about economics. Those are things that, number one, you learn on the job, economics. Number two, to me, economics also, or economic savvy, I think is something either you have it or you don't. So
how do you learn it on the job? I mean, think about it. How do people in academia learn it on the job versus people in the community based?
Well, the reason people go to academia is because they don't have that economical thing.
Oh, so they're completely...
In fact, I think that's linked to the fact that healthcare in big academic institutions, healthcare cost is about 3-4-fold compared to community, and the outcomes kept questionable in a lot of times. Yes, there is no... I don't think we should teach it. I think the system just... It's like there is a magnet. There are some people who go to... Yeah, look at me, right? I decided I was in academia for 2 years. I did not fall in love with it, to say the least.
I was
in bone marrow transplant, and I decided, no, I'm going to community, right? And I learned stuff when I started to practice here. But I got more involved in, or more, not more involved. I got more thoughtful. I kept thinking all the time about the relationship between the cost of healthcare and the outcomes. Meaning, when we spend more money, do we actually do better? And my conclusion was absolutely not.
Right.
The more money we spend, the lower is the result.
And hence the reason for good medicine is cheaper.
And hence out of the book, Good Medicine, Cheaper Medicine. I don't think knowledge should be acquired through going to college. Knowledge should be acquired through experience, watchful experience, observational experience, and reading novels, reading newspapers, etc.
So what are the physicians doing in order to increase the healthcare spend for our employers?
Could you repeat the question again?
What's causing the cost of healthcare to be higher for our employers?
And I think are we doing wrong that we're messing up the system?
I didn't want to be that nasty, but
no, it's not nasty. I mean, Shelley, listen, if you don't name the problem, you will have no intention and no desire to solve the problem. I mean, President Trump is getting a lot of heat because he just says it the way it is. He has mental diarrhea. But you know what? There is no way for him to address a problem unless he names it. Same with us. We need to name the problem. And the problem is, number one, we doctors don't seem to care about the cost. Number two, I think the more doctors are getting employed by hospitals, the more inefficient the system becomes. Because when you are a physician, you are independent, you only report to one lord, and that's the patient. When you are employed by a hospital or by a university, then there are two lords now. There is the employer who expects XYZ, expects so much utilization. They call it performance, actually. It's overutilization. And that is one of the major problems we have in the healthcare. Also, we doctors, the way we are training doctors now and the way we are functioning is we are more like symptom diagnosis people. So you come with a headache, the old days, or I still do it. I sit down, so tell me, what is the headache? Morning, evening, weekend, weekdays. When your husband's on vacation, do you still get headaches? The answer is no. So that's tension headache, right? Whereas what currently the thing is,
it's more like a knee-jerk reaction now.
Knee-jerk reaction. The headache, you get CAT scan, or you do MRI, or you do whatever. And number one, those tests are expensive. But I'm more concerned about the danger of doing those tests.
Explain to me a little bit more. Like
Anytime you do a test or a procedure, you inherently, you are exposing the patient to the risk. Now, there are procedures, a lot of them, that you have to do.
Yeah, the risk of maybe like more radiation exposure, maybe finding something that you've had all your life that they're going to try to.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
There are things that we're not supposed to know they exist in the human body. There are things that we shouldn't know. And when you discover them, Shelley, I see a lot of patients like they will come for second of your mother. You know, I went to the Cleveland Clinic and they were very thorough and they told me that I had a cyst in the kidney and nobody else before. 25% of normal people have cysts in the kidney. So why do I give a damn? But, right, sorry for using the word damn, right? But why do I care that the cyst is a benign thing? It never, ever, ever becomes malignant. Right?
Right.
But somebody on the other side can brag about it. Hey, we discovered something they didn't discover.
Well, don't you think, too, that sometimes a patient really wants something to be wrong? We have those types of patients.
Yeah.
That you just, if they come out of the exam room and everything is normal, they're not happy.
And there are. My point about the whole kidney cyst is, we need to keep an eye on it. Believe me, those cysts don't change. Sometimes they do get better, bigger. But keep an eye on it, meaning what? CAT scan every 6 months.
Yeah.
I worry about CAT scans.
And that's costing our employers, who's actually writing the checks for these procedures, at a high cost for healthcare. I mean, that's one of the things that's driving.
Right. And you know what's more difficult also? When such patients come to me and they say, oh, that's a cyst. You know what? Is it benign? I can swear it's benign. Why keep doing CAT scan? Well, I just want to be sure. Or I want to be on the safe side. That's hard to beat, especially when somebody else pays for the CAT scan.
Right. But employers are actually becoming more savvy. They have to be, because otherwise, it doesn't matter what Trump does. They're going to have to go offshore. We just can't keep up with the current rise in the spend on the employees' health care in today's world. So the employers, especially the ones that we're working with and potential ones, they're actually seeing the writing on the wall. Hey, there's somebody who can help us resolve this issue. And they're coming to us and saying, how can we do this?
So we met today with a company where we have our own retail pharmacy, right?
Right.
And they want to find out if we can provide drugs at a lower cost through our pharmacy. And then we had to explain to them that, of course, we can. We are already doing it. But there was an article that you and I read yesterday about the PBMs, that's the pharmacy benefit.
Right.
And the...
In the conundrum and convoluted.
Okay, Shelley, before you go there, could you explain to the listeners what are PBMs?
They're pharmacy benefit managers. Basically, they say that they're there to help control healthcare, the cost of oral medications. Actually, the cost of all medications, right? And they are typically now owned.
Is that what the real claim, or the claim is more like they manage the benefit to make it easy for the insurance?
Well, and they have some of those that either charge per script or they charge a management fee. But basically what their role is, they mm-hmm. say that they're, you know, they'll contact the people who's on their prescriptions and make sure that they're taking their medications appropriately. What they're basically doing is just making sure that that pill gets taken so they can sell them more. And on the back side,
there's nothing wrong with that, though. When I prescribe pills to patients, I don't want the patient to take the pill, because otherwise I'm failing.
I totally agree with that. But then when you see the patient is no longer on the pill, and you continue to get faxes from specialty pharmacies that still try to push
that has been a problem sometimes.
Yeah. So pharmacy benefit managers, they get in front of the employers who are deciding on what kind of health benefits they're going to provide.
Like how much copay patients will have, how much out-of-pocket there is, plan design.
But the problem is...
And what kind of medications are covered in the formulary.
Well, and that's based on who they're partnering with, which are specialty pharmacies. So there is now... Because pharmacy benefit managers, when PBMs are in front of the employer, they say that they don't get rebates, they don't get anything like that. But when they own a specialty pharmacy, then there's that whole different... underworld that comes in the form of rebates, and they say, oh yes, well, you know, we'll share some of these rebates with employers.
By the way, Shelley, I have no problem with the rebate. You know what I have a problem with? My problem with the rebate for the PBMs is if there is a big differential in the rebate between competing products, meaning two cholesterol lowering drugs, one is more expensive than the other. But if the manufacturer will give better rebates to the PBM on the expensive one, the PBM will advance the expensive one as being a preferred, which means the patient will pay more, the employer will pay more, and the PBM will make a little bit more.
Well, that's exactly what happened a couple episodes ago when I talked about United Healthcare coming out and saying we took a look at the IVIG space, which is a for immunoglobulin issues, right? And there are like six in the space. We realize that they're all exactly the same. They have the same outcomes, but we're only going to pay for, you know, A and B. Why is that? They are two of the higher cost ones. But you know for sure that they're going to get rebates on those two rather than the others.
Okay, Shelley, I understand all that. And I think you can be judgmental. You can say the PBMs are immoral. They are this. Honestly, I don't think so. There is something in America called free market. There is something in America called free choices.
But I think the choices have to be based on out of transparency. I mean, the PBMs are not being transparent.
See, there is, again, I agree, but there is a gray zone. There is a fine line between transparency and government control. The Congress currently is discussing issue with the transparency with the PBMs. Congress think that the PBMs are not being exposing or being transparent with the employers and so on. To be honest with you, Shelley, I agree with the Congress. I don't think it's the role of the government to control that. If I was an employer, I am an employer, of course, but if I was contract with the PBM, knowing what I know, I will tell them, you know what? I will not deal with you again because there are seven layers of bureaucracies between the manufacturer of the drug and my employee's mouth.
Right.
And who's paying for those seven layers? And actually, do we need the seven layers? I can imagine. You know, a GM car is made in Detroit, or a Toyota is made in Japan or in Tennessee. From the manufacturer to the consumer, how many middlemen there are? Well, you have to have the trucks to transport the car. Right?
Right.
And then the car comes to the dealership, and there is the salesman who actually gets a commission from the dealer. So really, there's only two layers. In healthcare, in the pharmacy benefit, seven layers of middle women and middle men. And all of a sudden, you know, we all complain. Everybody complains. Drug companies are shysters. They make so much money. They do. But you know what? Actually, what you see, what we see, the price, this is for the, you know this, Shelley, it's for the listeners. When the cost of a drug is $10,000 a month, Believe me, that is not going all to the pocket of the drug company.
Oh, no, no, no. They have to pay. They have to pay everybody along the way, those seven people along the way.
And then there's the rebates that the PBMs have, that if the PBM reaches a tier, again, the public, this is too complicated for the public to know, but I think employers and HR people in companies that employ people, manufacturing being a service, whatever it is, they need to know that there are some hidden incentives that might not work to your best interest, but they do serve the PBM's pocket.
Right.
And worse than that, sometimes even the consultants that you hire can have a share in the rebate from the PBM. Is this corruption? I don't think so. It's not nice. It's not moral.
But like I said, our employers that who we're talking to, we're helping to get completely around this whole.
Absolutely. That's our commitment. Our commitment. I mean.
So it's so nice to be able to sit down and talking with, you know, employers and a consultant and us and trying to figure out where is it that we can make something different happen. We should be totally outside the box with this. And it's enlightening to know that there are actually people out there that are creating this kind of new space that we can actually shove PBMs aside and say, go somewhere else.
Or compete, not shove them aside, compete with them. I think the PBMs are doing this is because they're becoming like a Carnegie cigar club. You have to be a member, or Macanudo club in New York. You have to be a member there, and when you're a member there, you talk to each other. Of course, it's against the law, but it's becoming a club. There is no outside forces, besides the Congress want to fight them, but no actually economical forces that is telling them or telling the employers, you do know you have an alternative option. And that's what we're doing with employers. Instead of having seven layers, that's actually one of the reasons why we opened a retail pharmacy. I'm a physician, right? And we do very well. We have a cancer center. But one of the reasons for the retail pharmacy was actually because I do believe.
To put our arms around that side, the pharmacy side, because we're doing
that. And lower the cost for the employers in the area.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we already have we're able to contain costs on the medical side, and we weren't able to do that on the pharmacy side. So that was one of the reasons that we started the in-house dispensary, and now we're moving into the retail. You know, you wrote a chapter about the golden pens,
mm-hmm.
and I was just thinking about that when you wrote that chapter. Did you ever think that you would be in this kind of role with this kind of new hat helping employers?
No, no, no. When I wrote the book, the Good Medicine, Cheaper Medicine, it was more like, number one, I wanted to have a book in my name, right? Number two, it was more venting that I had experience in three healthcare systems in the world. Iraq, which was really one of the best in the Middle East. England, probably the best in the world, was. And the U.S. And I saw the disparity between the three. And I also saw the pitfalls that every system had. And when I was an intern in Baghdad, they say we had to do rounds every day. And these are patients. I go to the attending. I said, these people are not changing. It's the same problem every day. Why do we have to keep them here? Well, because we need to do a barium enema tomorrow. Okay, can they go home? No, they live far away. They don't have transportation. Stuff like that. And I was thinking, this huge hospital, 1,500 beds, very expensive beds, for what? It's like a hotel. And when I went to Scotland, oh my gosh, even worse.
You know, which makes me think of, you know, one of the things that were brought up at our meeting today with this employer was the bed report. I had no idea that there was a bed report every morning, like in the hospitals. Like, we need to have more beds filled today, guys. we're low on our.
Well, because one of the people that came with them, she used to work for a hospital.
Yeah.
There is no doubt. I mean, I give the analogy, again, mischievously when I said hospitals are like the 27th, 28th, 29th, and 34th of a month where every single cop is on the highway trying to cash on some tickets because they reached a quota. I think it's the same with the hospital. When they have empty beds, they sit in the emergency room and they grab anybody you can to stick them in the hospital. I mean, somebody with a joint pain and really be in the hospital. But you know what? That's their business model. And to, you know, to sit on the high ground and preach on them that they're doing something that is not right for society. I don't believe in that. What I believe in, the free market. Come up with a plan that protect yourself from such behavior, rather than go to court, or rather than to just blame them, or rather than call them immoral. Yeah, you can call them all the names. Fact is, what they do is their derogative, and it is their legal right. What the employer would do is, why would I allow my patients to be, my employers to be admitted to the hospital when they don't need to?
Right.
Why should a patient with cough, an x-ray shows some haziness in the lower lungs, and all of a sudden they are given the diagnosis of pneumonia? Do you know that majority of patients who are admitted to the hospital with diagnosis of pneumonia actually don't have pneumonia?
Oh, I'm sure. And to think about the report that they got, this employer got about their hospital stays, they looked at it for the last 12 months and they thought, gosh, do we have that many employees to be going to the hospital? I mean, basically the ER department is receptionist desk for the hospital. I mean, it's just like if you go to ER, you're going to be admitted.
So when the employers, that when they are the ones who are feeling the brunt of the economic brunt, they're reacting. And that's why these people came and said, can you help us with the pharmacy benefit? And we did the math. We can save them,
can
I think you said 60%. Okay. I think they will be very happy if we even save them 20%. And you know what? In the process, by the way, we make money too.
Yeah, there's a whole lot that goes behind that money savings. It just doesn't happen. I mean,
it's not a charity. It's not a charity work. It is a business model that compete with other entities. It just happens to be more beneficial, we think, to our employers in town. And you know what? The more employers in town are successful, the more people they hire, safer town is, more jobs are. I mean, this is our town, and I think that's great.
Yeah. There's a lot to the undercurrent that goes on behind getting prescription medications and especially lowering the cost. So, like you said, I mean, we don't do it for free, but our staff definitely wants paid every 2 weeks. I know that for a fact. So we do have, you know, staff that employ to make sure that they're getting the medication safely and as lowest cost as we can. We tap into financial assistance programs. That isn't easy. Those take times to be able to get those funds and to be able to track those funds and get everything in order and make sure that the medication is delivered safely and timely to the patient.
Yeah. And you know what, Shari, I mean, there's one thing that really bothers me a lot, and one of the people in the meeting today awakened the subject. Remember when January 4th, 2018, when it was announced that Affinity will be closed? What was my immediate knee-jerk reaction? I was in Dallas. I think I've been the story before. My knee-jerk reaction was, oh my gosh, if this hospital is closed, number one, we will lose 100 plus physicians, which means their houses are empty, which means the housing market will go down. Number two, there will be only two hospitals left in town, which means there will be less competition. Number three, I don't know if the two hospitals in town will be able to absorb, God forbid, all the beds needed in a catastrophe, like an airplane lands or a missile attack by North Korea. No, they can't reach here. Right? Or anything. And that's why immediately I said, now I need to do something. I tried to get, and one of the things I thought about was, who are the people who will be hurt the most besides patients? The employers.
Yes.
So immediately started contacting employers. Guys, this is not good for you. And today one of them said, we are worried that with the closure of Affinity, that the healthcare costs, and the insurance broker said, they are predicting that the premiums will hike this year. You know what worries me the most? Rumors are Mercy is selling to somebody. Rumors are Altman is selling to somebody. If Mercy sells, it's not going to be sold to somebody like me. No. They'll be selling them to a big institution. Generally, big institutions have a higher fee schedule.
Naturally so, yes.
Now, Cleveland Clinic bought Union Hospital, right? A big employer in that area wanted kind of a contract that...
Reference-based
that's similar to Medicare. And
right.
Cleveland Clinic said...
No.
They said to him, go to hell.
Yeah.
You know why they said that? They're the only game in town.
Yep.
Monopoly can be dangerous. I am concerned that if the two hospitals we have in town, if they act stupid enough to sell out, and I say the word stupid meaningfully, I mean it, that will hurt the community so much. Plus, they don't have the reason to sell. They are both doing well financially. I know they both have good cash reserve. Why selling? I realize the nuns are all getting old and they don't get, they're not getting a new generation of young women who want to become nuns. But there are other ways. I mean, Catholic institutions are surviving by the leadership of the good Catholic people who are not even the clergy. I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's too bad because, as we know, Affinity was one of our go-to hospitals for our employers. And when they went out of the ballgame, you know, we're trying to get the other two hospitals to work with us with the employers, and they're both turning their heads, saying, sorry, we can't do that.
Tell me more about that.
Well, we had a reference-based negotiated contract with Affinity, so anything done in the outpatient setting...
For our employers
was...
Our employers, meaning our customers for the on-site clinics.
Right. It was done at paid at a Medicare rate. To me, if you accept Medicare patients and Medicare as payment in full, well, payment is the 80% in case they have a 20%, whatever. If you accept the Medicare allowable for Medicare patients, why can't you accept a Medicare rate on other people? And so we did that with Affinity, and we were successful in doing that for many years. So that's why it was hurtful to us and our clients who the employers
were. So there were three hospitals, and Affinity wanted to compete, and they reached a contract with us.
Yes.
Now there's only two hospitals. What did they say?
And they say no.
Absolutely not. Because they said normally we will charge 400%, right?
Yeah, they don't want to see the dollar.
This is what people like me predicted when Affinity closed, and that is a problem. But you know what? They are not smarter than we are. They are not smarter than the employers in town, and we will find ways.
Oh, we're already finding ways to
minimize hospitalization, yeah. Minimize cost of drugs, and all that.
So going to other, there's plenty of other facilities that have x-rays outside of the hospital and not affiliated with the hospital. And so we're finding other pockets of people who are community-based to be able to lower the cost. So
there's always alternatives.
That's what our job is.
We always expand that alternative. There are some people who are employed by the hospital who say, oh, my gosh, we need the hospital to make more money because we'll get bonuses and so on. You know, it's a good comment to make, but I would rather have those people work in a company that is making computers. Or let's say there's a drug company in Canton that makes drugs to cure patients rather than redundant, inflated employment in the hospital that actually is parasite on the employers in town, taking their money in the name of healthcare.
On that note, it's been very mind-blowing again today. As always, our episodes are archived on our website at GabrielCancerCenter.com if you'd like to go back to any of our other episodes. Thank you. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.